Hello, hockey humans of the world. Welcome to Tough Call Podcast Season 4, where I talk about all the latest hits and suspensions across the NHL. And thanks to you folks who followed along and helped grow the Tough Call community. I've got 7 times the number of YouTube subscribers I had at this time last year, and it's growing every day now. YouTube is where you'll find my in-depth video breakdowns of the plays I cover here on the audio podcast. There's always lots of entertaining chatter in the comments to join in on. Just go to YouTube and search Tough Call Channel to find me. You can also follow me on Twitter, @ToughCallPod, or you can follow me on Facebook and Instagram as well. And one of the most important things you can do is hit the subscribe button for this audio podcast right now and give it a 5-star rating. It really does help with the rankings, and the more people that hear us, maybe the more brain injuries we can prevent in hockey. And that's ultimately what this is all about. I don't want to take the hitting out of hockey. I want to put the hockey back in hitting. Hi, folks. Welcome to Tough Call Podcast Season 4, Episode 1, which will cover the period from September 24th to 30th, 2022, or basically everything that's happened so far since the NHL preseason opened last Saturday. And there's already a ton of recent content on my YouTube channel, lots of big contact in general, and in particular, a lot of open ice hitting. In general, that's something we always complain we don't see enough of in this modern NHL, but it's been starting to happen more and more, and I think that's fantastic. I think if done right, this could be a nice transformation into the more old-school looking hockey, which, believe it or not, is exactly what I'm trying to mold the sport into. I want these massive, thunderous collisions. And with the skating ability of players these days, the edge control, the pivoting work, the agility, there's a huge opportunity to develop the skill of checking. Dare I say the art of checking once more. But those who fail to learn from the lessons of history are doomed to repeat them. And what we absolutely cannot afford is a full return to the days where being bigger mattered more than being talented. In order to throw a big hit back then, all you needed was to be big enough to hurt someone and just barely good enough to get close enough to hit them in whatever manner possible at any point in time on the ice. In order to make a decent legal check in today's NHL under today's rules, you have to be agile enough to get the right angle of approach, be a good enough skater to pivot and speed match, be balanced enough to hold form during contact, and then quick enough to get back into the play immediately so you don't cost your team. Now that's not to say old school players weren't talented enough to do that. It's that the NHL rulebook, the culture, the very fabric of the game of hockey, it never ever demanded it of them, so they never had to. Today's game is different. We have a real opportunity to create the greatest era of hockey there ever was, an era where checking is no longer the weapon of choice to counter or mitigate skill, but rather becomes another tool for the already skilled player to separate themselves even more from the pack. That's the NHL I want, and that's the sport I want to see in general, of hockey at all levels. As I always say, I don't want to take the hitting out of hockey. I want to put the hockey back in hitting. And with that, it's time for our weekly fines and suspensions recap, or WTFs. We're only 1 week into the preseason, and there's already been one fine and one suspension this year. And really, there could have been a lot more. The suspension was to Jacob Melanson of the Seattle Kraken. He got 2 games for an illegal check to the head against the Edmonton Oilers. And I have a video up on my YouTube channel explaining why I would have suspended as well. I'd have given him 4 games. And you go watch that video for my breakdown of the hit. But what I want to talk about here on this podcast is how the NHL suspended him specifically for an illegal check to the head rather than interference. Now, in the initial tweet from the NHL's Department of Player Safety, they said he was going to have a hearing for interference / illegal check to the head. But when they announced the suspension, they only mentioned the illegal check to the head. And in their explanation video, they do mention the check was initiated after the puck was gone, which means it was late, which means it was interference. But they chose to emphasize the head aspect. And this could be because of some technicality. For instance, there's no provision for a match penalty under Rule 56 interference, and there is a match penalty option under Rule 48 illegal check to the head. So it could be something like that, but where I don't have to worry about things like that, I'd have suspended him under interference rather than illegal check to the head. Because to me, filing it under illegal check to the head implies it would have been legal had he not made head contact, where really the danger to me was in making the choice to finish that hit at all after the player was no longer eligible. It would have been a penalty either way. So it was a bad choice to finish this check on an unsuspecting player who was ineligible for any contact at all, to the head or otherwise. And I'd have wanted my suspension to reflect that. Now, the fine was to Jeff Petrie for his from-behind attempted haymaker push punch or whatever it was to the back of an opponent's head. I don't care what he was trying to do. That is not the right way to go about it at all, and I think he should have been suspended instead of fined, but I'm glad they at least recognized it. And, of course, there's a hearing today for Jacob Doty of the Los Angeles Kings after his open ice hit on Jeffrey Vial against San Jose. And that video is also on my YouTube, so go check that out right now. You can see the video of the incident, and you can see my breakdown and the suspension I would give. You leave a comment about what you think, if he'll get a punishment, or what kind of punishment. And that hearing, as of this recording, has not been announced yet. It probably has taken place, but the result hasn't been announced yet. So we'll talk about whatever he gets next week. Now it's time for the incident of the week. And I'm choosing a fight, believe it or not. To start this season, I'm choosing a fight as my incident of the week. The Connor Carrick fight with Dwight Allison, earlier in the week to be exact. Now, what started it all was a massive legal open ice check by Carrick on Antoine Roussel of the Philadelphia Flyers. And Allison skated up the ice and immediately challenged and grabbed Carrick, and they had a bit of a hugging dance-style fight. It wasn't much of a fight. The big thing to come out of it was that Allison was given the dreaded instigator penalty. For those that don't know, that's you get a fighting major, but you also, if you instigate the fight, get a 2-minute minor penalty for instigating and an additional 10-minute misconduct. When you add it all up with the 5-minute major for fighting, that's 17 total minutes and penalties a player has to serve whenever they instigate a fight. And I was dumb enough to put a video out explaining why I think that's a good thing, a good rule. And I'd even go so far as to say a necessary rule for the National Hockey League in particular. It's something I feel like I'm going to be talking about a lot this year. But for now, I'd suggest watching my video on this hit and then a follow-up video I made about the comments Flyers coach John Tortorella made about Allison's decision to fight. Now, in his press conference, Tort surprised me when he said he wants his team to be able to take a hit. He wants these big open ice hits back in the game, which is exactly what I talked about in the opening to this episode. Hockey needs these. And he's going to actually be actively asking his team, whenever they happen to his players, to, instead of causing a scrum or feeling like they need to fight, just get up, shake it off, and move on. It's so refreshing. Now, the thing is, that's not to say there isn't a time where it makes sense to step up and defend a teammate. Even me. Emphasize the skill, use the violence as a last resort kind of coach and player. Even me, I recognize there are times to do it. And no one is trying to take that away from the players. The instigator rule is not trying to take that option away. Players can choose when they feel it's necessary to step up and fight or defend their teammate. And the officials in the league can choose when they agree whether it was necessary or not legally. And those two situations don't always have to line up. Where fans go wrong is they believe if a player feels he needs to instigate a fight, then the league should just allow it because players know best. But what about a fight for a momentum change, for example, for a confidence boost when your team's feeling down and you want to get some energy into the game? Those are great reasons for a player to choose to fight. They don't necessarily help the league police the game and keep the game safe. And in fact, if you really look at it, those fights actually do the exact opposite in terms of safety. That's why the instigator rule is in there. It's what it's specifically designed to protect players from, is for people going out and instigating fights for reasons other than what we want to see them as, which is the romantic reason of protecting players and keeping the game safe. And in this particular case, with the Allison situation, Carrick threw a clean, legal check. It was hard, yeah, but them's the breaks sometimes in hockey. It's what we all claim we want until it happens to our team. And then we have to send a message that you can't do that to our guys. Well, you can't have it both ways as a fan. Either you want big hits or you don't. And if you do actually want them, then we have to stop being fine when players fight or cause a scrum over every little check. It really gets old really fast. And the main argument I see over and over in my video comments on this topic is, well, he was just stepping up to protect his teammate, or he was just defending his teammate, or he was just sending a message to the other team that they can't push their team around. Or the best one, of course, is, well, it's preseason. He was just trying to make the team. That's great, but that's not an argument for or against the instigator rule. That's an argument for whether or not it was a good choice to fight in that situation. And like I said, for individual teams and individual players, that's going to vary. But for the National Hockey League as a whole, for player safety as a whole, wanting to fight to change momentum or defend your teammate, or especially because you want to make a team, isn't a good enough reason to forgo protecting the random player on the other team you're using for that agenda. That player was just out there trying to make a clean play, and he should be rewarded for it. So in this case, Carrick deserves to be protected just as much as anyone else. He doesn't need to be punished by being forced into a fight and then having to sit for 5 minutes while the other team comes out even. It might be a good choice for your player to fight, but it's a choice a player makes knowing it comes with an extra 2 minute minor and a 10 minute misconduct, and you live with it and you move on. So now we'll do the buy request. And this week's buy request comes from Twitter follower at RoboStop10. And they sent me a clip of the hit by Jan Janik on Trevor Zegras. Again, you can go to my YouTube and watch the clip and my breakdown of it. And it's another one of the recent heavy open ice checks we've seen in the preseason, the ones that excite me and scare me all at the same time. And to me, this is another clean one. What I really like about it is there's no lunge or extension at all. To me, if you're the player delivering the check in these situations, this one's very close to north-south contact. You have to pick a path of travel and then commit to it. When Zegras saw it coming, he cut back to his right, and it's so tempting as the checker to reach an arm or a leg out or extend the shoulder out and up, and in some cases even jump a little bit to the side to make sure you don't miss the opponent if the opponent does try and step out of the way Zegras did here. And here Janik does none of that. He stays low and planted. It's shoulder to core all the way. I know some people think this is a bit of an elbow because of the way Yannick's arm follows through, but I think that happens after the contact and as a consequence of the physics of this particular type of check. But he doesn't reach or lunge or launch out on purpose. I like it. I love it. I want some more of it. My only regret about this situation is that a player got injured, and I do hope Zegras is okay. Okay, so we've reached the later segment of the episode called Here's the Thing, where I usually pick a topic and talk about it for 5 minutes or so. And the topic I'm going to pick today stems from a Hodgson hit on Didier earlier in the preseason. And I have a video of that on my YouTube channel you can look at. And it's one where a classic defender racing to the corner in his own zone for the puck. He's trying to evade a forechecker. Forechecker angles the D away from where he wants to go. So the D turns his back, and then the forechecker goes through him. In this case, Hodgson actually held up pretty good, but he did stick his hand out for some reason and wrap it around, and that forced Didier's head into the boards. That was the thing that kind of got me there. But he did actually try and lean to his left and take the weight away from driving him through the boards, which is good. But this whole turning the back argument, why do defenders turn their back? Why don't they just take the hit? I mean, get out of here with that. It's turning they're not turning their back. And my title of my video is actually, Why Are Forecheckers So Surprised When Angling Works? And here's my point. Here's the thing. If you're a forechecker, you're trying to steer that defender with your stick. You stay low, you have your stick on the ice in one hand, or you should. If you don't, you're already putting yourself in a situation where you're risking taking a cross-checking penalty, and you're obviously not going for the puck if your stick is up in the air. So you're not showing any evidence of making any sort of play on the puck, so you're automatically putting yourself at greater risk for taking a penalty. You're also putting yourself at greater risk for committing to a hit even when it's not there. If you're puck-focused and then you finish your contact, if that happens to be the result of the process you're going through, which is trying to remove that player from the puck, then that's okay. But if your stick is up and you're already looking for contact no matter what, then you're going to make some bad choices and you're not going to be able to hold up if that defender does turn their back. But it's one thing to say the defender turned their back, but really we have to think about what they're doing. Is they're trying to escape from contact. They're trying to make a hockey play, an escape move that's taught in all the programs you have for minor hockey, for development in Hockey Canada and Hockey USA. They're called escape moves, and it's literally because you don't want the D to cough the puck up, take a hit, and turn the puck over. That's the whole point. And as a forechecker, you're trying to check that D off the puck so that they will cough the puck up and turn it over. But it's taught that those defenders are supposed to try and avoid or evade that check if at all possible. They're not just supposed to lay up and allow themselves to get smashed into the end of the rink. Why would anyone in their right mind do that? I don't know why people always expect them to, especially the forechecker. And this is the biggest part of why I'm confused by this. Is 9.5 times out of 10, that defender turns their back specifically because the forechecker encouraged them to and made them do it. You put your stick down to steer that defender, you angle them away from where they want to go, and then you pounce on them, then you move in on them. So why are players so surprised when they do all that work, get themselves up the ice, and put themselves in good position, good defensive position, they angle the player where they want to go? Why are they so surprised when the player suddenly tries to turn the way they're encouraging them to go? If you're playing soccer with someone, and they have the ball on their weak foot, whatever it may be, let's just say a player's right-footed and they have the ball on their right foot, you're going to stand to a side and angle them so that they'll have to go to their left and put the ball on the left foot. Are you then going to be mystified when they actually follow through and do it? Are you going to be shocked that now they're on the side that you just told them to and encouraged them to go and gave them the space to go? No. So why are we so surprised as forwards? You're coming in with such speed and everyone says, oh, they can't react that fast. It happens too fast. They knew in their mind that's what they were trying to tell this defender to do. They knew from the blue line in that that's what they were going to do. So it didn't happen fast. It shouldn't be a surprise to them. That's what they knew all along was going to happen. And they caused it to happen by their very own action, by design, by a plan, by a premeditated move that they made. We teach that in angling. You know how to angle. These players are professionals. They do it all the time. They do it better than anyone else. So why are they so surprised when the best defenders try and do everything they can to use their skill to escape that situation? Why is it a mystery that you're telling them to go one way and then they go that way and you say, well, I didn't expect that to happen. I had no choice but to drive through his back. I was committed to the hit. What are you committed to that hit for when you know that defender's going to turn at the last second because you told them to? That's what I don't get. Angling works. That's why we do it. Angling intentionally forces the defender to turn their back by nature. And all these escape moves that defenders want to do make them turn their back by nature. So why, if everyone is playing their hockey purpose properly and doing everything they were taught by design, by intention to do, why are we using that as an excuse saying it happened too fast? I didn't see it coming. You made it happen. So you need to be able to deal with the consequences when it does. You cannot, as a player delivering that check, finish that check when it is no longer safe to do so. And you cannot use an excuse that it happened too fast when you are the reason it became no longer safe to do so by way of angling and encouraging that player to turn that way. I'm done with the excuse he turned his back. You're a hockey player. You know it's coming. You've done your job angling. Now you have to be quick enough to get on the other side when they turn and angle them off that way. Don't be lazy. Go through their back and then plead too quickly. Well, that's it, folks. Thanks for listening to this episode of Tough Call Podcast. Before you go anywhere else, please hit the subscribe or follow button to never miss an episode. Then go visit my YouTube channel and watch all the videos I mentioned here and even more content. And subscribe there as well while you're there. See you next week and enjoy the hockey.